Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are tackling a topic that I think for a lot of people is shrouded in fear and mystery: radioactivity.
It really is. You know, you say that word and the first things that pop into your head are probably mushroom clouds, glowing waste barrels.
Or, you know, scenes from Chernobyl. It's almost always linked to disaster.
Exactly. It's this invisible force, and that invisibility just breeds fear. But our mission today, with the help of a fantastic book, Radioactivity, a very short introduction by Claudio Tunis, is to, well, to reframe that entire picture.
So not just about bombs and power plants.
Not at all. Tunis argues that radioactivity isn't some fringe topic from 20th century physics. It's a fundamental, primordial force of nature. It's in the cosmos. It's in our planet. It's even inside our own bodies.
So it's something we need to understand to make sense of the modern world.
I think so, yeah. He calls it nuclear literacy. And it's essential for everything from energy policy debates to understanding modern medicine.
Okay, so before we dive into the science, who is our guide on this journey? Who is Claudio Tunis?
Well, he's a really distinguished Italian physicist. He's done a lot of work at the International Center for Theoretical Physics in Trieste.
So he's deep in the theory.
He is, but what makes him so unique is that he's not just a theorist. He has this dual expertise.
How so?
His specialty is a technique called accelerator mass spectrometry, or AMS. And it's this incredibly sensitive tool for measuring tiny, tiny traces of radioisotopes.
And he uses this for what?
This is the cool part. He's also an archaeologist and a geologist. He uses nuclear physics as a practical tool to unlock the past.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's using radiocarbon dating to understand human history. He's analyzing ice cores to map out climate change. He's not just thinking about radioactivity. He is actively using it as a clock to read the history of our planet.
That is a fascinating perspective. He's got his hands dirty, so to speak.
Exactly. It gives him this indispensable, practical view of the subject.
So with that in mind, what's the big idea behind the book? What's he trying to do?
The core purpose is really just demystification. He wants to give people an antidote to what he calls radiophobia.
The fear of radiation.
Right. He wants to strip away all the sensationalism and just show you the fundamental science.
And the book's journey starts way back, doesn't it, with the discovery itself?
It does. It kicks off in 1896. Henri Becquerel accidentally leaves some uranium salts on a photographic plate in a dark drawer.
And when he develops it?
It's exposed. There's an image on it. He realizes this material is giving off some kind of intrinsic, invisible energy all on its own. It was a complete accident.
A happy accident that led to the Curies.
Yes. Marie and Pierre Curie, they're the ones who actually coined the term radioactivity. And their work, I mean, isolating polonium and radium from literally tons of ore, it was just heroic.
And they established this core idea of instability, that certain elements are just naturally unstable.
That's the heart of it. Radioactivity is just an atomic nucleus that has too much energy, and it's trying to get to a more stable, lower energy state.
And that leads right into the book's central theme, this kind of Jekyll and Hyde duality.
It really does. On one side, you have the benevolent face, the Dr. Jekyll.
Which is mainly in medicine, I assume.
Exactly. Things like PET scans, which we can talk more about, that help doctors find cancer early, and radiotherapy to destroy tumors, and of course this idea of the infallible clock for dating ancient things.
But then there's Mr. Hyde, the malevolent side.
And that's where we get into nuclear fission. The book is really clear about the two paths here, the immense power of a nuclear reactor, but also the immense challenges like waste and accidents, and then of course the existential threat of nuclear weapons.
So he wants the reader to understand the trade-offs, to see both sides clearly.
Precisely. To appreciate the benefits, but also to respect the profound dangers.
Okay, let's go big picture for a moment. You mentioned the cosmos, and this is where the book really shifts your perspective, I think.
It really does. Tunis makes this powerful case that the heavy radioactive elements, things like uranium and thorium, weren't even made on Earth.
So where did they come from?
Supernova explosions. Billions of years ago, before our solar system even existed. These elements were forged in the fiery death of ancient stars. He calls them primordial radionuclides.
So we are, and I think this is a quote from the book, made of radioactive stardust.
We literally are. But it's not just a poetic idea that radioactive stardust is still active inside our planet right now. The slow, steady decay of those elements is the main source of Earth's geothermal heat.
That's what keeps the core molten.
Yes. It's our planet's internal engine. It drives plate tectonics, it fuels volcanoes, it even generates the magnetic field that protects us from cosmic rays. Without that natural internal radioactivity, Earth would be a cold, dead rock like Mars.
That context is huge. This isn't just something in a lab. It's what makes our planet alive.
It's a constant, vital, natural process.
All right, let's get into the mechanics just a little. The book does a good job of making this accessible. How does an atom actually decay?
There are three main ways it sheds that excess energy.
Okay, what's the first one?
That's alpha decay. The nucleus just spits out a relatively big particle, two protons and two neutrons, which is basically a helium nucleus.
And that's not too dangerous.
On its own, it's easily stopped. A piece of paper, even your skin, can block it. The danger is if you were to, say, inhale or ingest a substance that emits alpha particles.
Got it. What's next?
Then you have beta decay. This is where a neutron inside the nucleus flips and becomes a proton, or the other way around. When that happens, it shoots out a high-speed electron.
A bit more powerful.
A lot more penetrating, yeah. You'd need something like a sheet of aluminum to stop a beta particle.
And the third one is the one we always hear about.
Gamma decay.
Right.
Right. This is pure energy. It's a high-energy photon, a gamma ray. This usually happens right after an alpha or beta decay, when the nucleus still has some leftover energy to get rid of.
And these are the ones that are really hard to stop.
Extremely. You need thick lead or concrete. But the key to all three is that they happen at a perfectly predictable rate.
Which brings us back to the ultimate clock.
Exactly. The concept of half-life. It's the fixed amount of time it takes for half the atoms in a sample to decay. And nothing can change it. Not heat, not pressure, not chemicals. It's an inviolable constant of nature.
So that's how we get something like radiocarbon dating.
Yep. Carbon-14 has a half-life of around 5,730 years. While you're alive, you're constantly taking in C14. The moment you die, that stops and the C14 clock starts ticking down.
So by measuring how much is left,
you can figure out how old something is up to about 50,000 years. It completely revolutionized archaeology and our understanding of human history.
And for things like the age of the Earth, you just use an element with a much, much longer half-life.
Right, like uranium lead dating. That's how we know the Earth is about 4.5 billion years old. It's an incredible gift to science.
It is. But that same powerful mechanism led to something much more potent. Nuclear fission.
Yeah.
Can you break that down simply for us?
Sure. Fission is just the act of splitting a very heavy atom, usually uranium-235. You hit it with a single neutron, and it splits into smaller atoms.
And that releases a huge amount of energy.
A tremendous amount. But it also releases two or three more neutrons, and those neutrons can then go and split other uranium atoms.
Creating a chain reaction.
Exactly. And the entire difference between a power plant and a bomb comes down to one thing. Controlling that reaction.
How is it controlled in a reactor?
In a power plant, they use what are called control rods. These rods absorb the excess neutrons, so the chain reaction happens at a steady, stable rate. It produces a massive amount of heat, which makes steam and generates electricity, all without any greenhouse gases.
But also with the risk of accidents, like we mentioned. Chernobyl, Fukushima.
Right. And Tunis is clear that those were failures of engineering and safety protocols, not a failure of the physics itself. But then you have the other side of the coin.
Uncontrolled fission.
The bomb, where that chain reaction is allowed to happen all at once, in a fraction of a second, releasing a catastrophic amount of energy.
It's such a stark contrast. But the book offers a really good counterpoint to the bomb, another use of this process in medicine, PET scans.
Yes, positron emission tomography. It's a beautiful application. You inject a patient with a radioactive tracer, which is usually attached to a sugar molecule.
By sugar.
Because cancer cells are hyperactive. They gobble up sugar way faster than healthy cells. So this radioactive sugar concentrates right in the tumor.
So the tumor basically lights up for the doctors.
That's a great way to put it. The tracer emits particles that a scanner can see, creating a 3D map of exactly where the disease is. It's an incredible diagnostic tool, and it's using radioactivity to save lives.
Okay, let's zoom out again and pull together the main themes here. What's the first big takeaway?
The first is definitely that duality. Radioactivity is a neutral force. It isn't good or evil. It's just physics.
Mm-hmm.
The morality comes from how we choose to use it.
It's our application, our wisdom, our control that matters.
Entirely. The same process can cure cancer or destroy a city. The choice is ours.
What's the second big theme?
I'd say it's the idea of radioactivity as the ultimate clock. The discovery of the half-life wasn't just a scientific detail. It was a revolution in how we understand time itself. It allowed us to measure the deep history of our planet and our species.
It took us beyond written history into, well, cosmic history.
Absolutely. And the third theme is the challenge of rational risk perception. Tunes argues we really need to combat radiophobia.
So we need to develop what he called risk literacy.
Exactly. To actually understand what a radiation dose means, you know, we're all exposed to natural background radiation every single day. A chest x-ray is a tiny, tiny dose. We need to be able to compare the real risks against the very real benefits.
The book has some fantastic lines that really capture these big ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I think my favorite was about time.
Radioactivity is the universe's way of keeping time. It's just so perfect. It connects what we do in a lab to the grand scale of the cosmos.
And the one that makes it so personal.
We are not just made of stardust. We are made of radioactive stardust. It's a reminder of that intimate connection we have to these massive stellar events from billions of years ago.
There's one more that really hit me, the one about waste.
Yes. Radioactive waste is not just a technical problem. It is a moral obligation to future generations.
Yep.
That one gives you pause. It frames it as a question of stewardship that lasts longer than any civilization in history.
So how can we apply all this knowledge in our daily lives?
Well, for one, it helps you become an informed citizen. When people are debating energy policy, you can move beyond a simple for or against nuclear power and have a more nuanced conversation about the real trade-offs.
That makes sense. What else?
It can also demystify medical procedures. If you or a loved one ever needs a PET scan or radiotherapy, understanding how it works, how controlled the doses are, can really reduce a lot of the anxiety and fear around it.
And I think the third one is just a deeper appreciation for the world around us.
Totally. To look at a mountain range and understand that the forces that pushed it up are powered by the slow, steady decay of atoms deep inside the Earth, it changes how you see everything. It connects you to deep time.
So as we wrap up, what was the biggest insight for you from this deep dive?
For me, it was just how successfully the book transforms radioactivity from this scary, abstract bogeyman into a tangible, fundamental part of our universe. It really proves that knowledge is the best antidote to fear.
I'd agree with that. The lasting message for me is about responsibility. We've unlocked this incredible power, and the book makes it clear that our challenge now is to make sure our wisdom keeps pace with our science. And that brings us to a final thought for you, our listener, to take away. Since we are constantly exposed to natural background radiation every day, from the soil to the food we eat, what existing everyday risks are we accepting without a second thought that might scientifically outweigh the perceived dangers of controlled nuclear technology?
Something to think about.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.